Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Jill, and happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I had a weird day yesterday, but it was a good and fine, and I've gone around the sun once again. Here we are.
Yeah. And it might be the last birthday that you experience a time change.
I hope so. I was like, what is this news about politics? Yeah. I probably don't want to look. And then I was like, wait, everyone agreed on something? Oh, yes. It's because time change is Satan.
It is actually the devil incarnate.
It really is.
Correct usage of that? Probably not. But yeah, it's a hellscape.
It really is. It's no good. Yeah. What's going on with you?
Not a whole lot. I cannot tell you what a productive day I have had. I worked out this morning.
This is the second time you have come to our recording, pepped and ready to go, and been like, I worked out today.
And you want to know? The count total is 2.
That makes it even better.
But I was just like, I actually have a little bit of time. I'm going to do it. And I feel really like good and energized from it. And
yeah.
I'm just in a good mental spot right now.
I totally get that. Yeah. The sun has been out for like
that too.
2 or 3 consecutive days. So I feel like a different person.
Yes.
Who knows?
I hate how effective that is.
Yes. Why? Yeah. Why is that the case?
Because it's also killing us.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, yes. Welcome to Book It. What are we talking about today?
Okay. So I think we have all had this experience where you get a new book and you're excited to read it. Maybe you've seen it like hyped all over social media or all of your friends and coworkers are raving about it. You dive in and it just like isn't clicking. And you persist and you try to see what everyone else saw in it. And you think maybe it's a slow starter and any page now, it's going to suck me in. And then you get frustrated with yourself for not getting it and on and on and on. But do you quit the book? Today we are going to talk about books we did not finish or wish that we did not finish. But before we get into it, I want to clarify that we are talking about books we did not enjoy or books that we didn't find interesting, not about not persisting with a book that challenges you to think in new ways or understand experiences or perspectives that differ from your own.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So my question for you, do you DNF books?
See, that's the thing is that I traditionally haven't DNF'd a book in years, and it's because, and I have a theory about this, it's because of what my goals used to be, which was a numbers game, and I was always worried that if I DNF something, then I wasted that time with a book that ultimately wasn't going to get me near my goal. So I would just soldier on and finish a book that I hated reading from start to finish. And I actually think you and I have talked about this before, where that actually makes your reading take longer when when you aren't DNFing things, because it's just because it's a dirge. It's so slow to get through because you're not enjoying it. So I'm not against DNFing. I think I have an intention to lean into that if I'm not connecting with a book moving forward as I read without thinking of the numbers. But I honestly, the last time I DNF'd was probably in one of the books I'm bringing today was 2017. Like I read all the books, and I wish there were other books in here that I wish I hadn't.
You'll be shocked to hear that I did some reading on this topic before we discussed it today. I know. But I found the craziest thing. So there's this psychologist. Psychology is so fascinating to me because people study
everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's this psychologist. They did all these studies. And they found that people who are, quote unquote, gritty, you know, they like have a lot of perseverance and like a can-do attitude, are more likely to finish a book even if they don't like it. And that their grit takes over and they push through, whereas someone with less perseverance is more willing to toss it aside when it's not a good fit. It cracked me up. I feel totally called out. It's like my favorite character trait gone totally toxic.
Well, that's interesting because I don't know. I don't think I am someone who has a lot of grit, but I do think I am someone who is like a person of his word. Like, I'm loyal and I can be accounted on, I think. So I think that like a version of that is like, if I say I'm going to finish a book, even to myself, then I'm going to finish it.
I think so. The second part of the study, I think, fits you to a T because it matches what you said earlier. They also found that goal-oriented people who were less likely to discard a book without finishing it. So if you're a person who counts your pages or tracks your reading, you were more likely to finish a book because there is a reward for tracking it. Like there's that dopamine at the end, even though you hated the whole experience.
And it makes me, it has an adverse effect on my reading overall, where I just like also just like feel, it makes me not like reading as much.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing was like so interesting.
Yeah.
And it just had me questioning like, why do we do this to ourselves?
Right. Literally to ourselves. No one's making us.
Right. So I have this theory.
Tell me.
So like most of us come to reading through school and, you know, books are assigned. And even if we don't like them, we have to finish them. We have to dissect them. Write papers on them, spend days talking about them and take tests. And you spend years, like literal years, reading books, regardless of whether or not you like them.
Right.
And I mean, things are very different at school right now, but definitely if you're my age, you know, you didn't have a lot of choice in what you read or the ability to say, I didn't like this book.
Yes.
It was like, these books are classics.
Exactly.
Everyone likes them. And so if you're not balancing out that reading by reading for pleasure outside of school, like that's your reading experience.
Right.
And then you're an adult. And I think this kind of goes two ways. You like to read generally. So you're a person who will persist because that's what you've been conditioned to do.
Right.
Or you never really clicked with a book because they weren't of your choosing. You didn't read for pleasure. And so you just don't read.
Because you're not taught how to read for pleasure.
Right. I think both of these options suck.
Yeah, they're awful.
I don't know. That's my theory about it. I have to say, though, for myself, is like, and I really don't get this, I feel guilty if I don't finish a book.
Me too. I like don't want to like even suggest I even started reading it. Like, it just doesn't exist.
Right. Like, I feel like I owe it. I don't know who I owe it to. The book. Right. The author, the person who recommended it to me.
Oh, that's a big deal.
Bookstagram person I don't know in real life. Yeah. Like, why would I owe any of these people / things anything?
They don't care.
But then why do I feel guilty about it?
I think for me, it used to be the idea of DNFing a book now, I don't feel guilty. But a year ago, I would have felt guilty. And I think it is completely based off of like, what your character traits are, like you were saying, like, because I'm shifting what my goals look like, I'm allowing space for that to be true. And people DNF all the time. Like I follow people on Instagram who DNF, like they'll post something they'll read and like, I can't finish this. And I do think it's just part of the reading experience is because like, I love what you said about required reading. Cause something that I really found to be true is that I didn't know that I was allowed to not like a book, especially if it was a classic. And I just assumed all the adults in my life who were telling me to read it also loved it. our English teacher, our junior year, was notoriously very hard. And it was the year we read The Grapes of Wrath and Huckleberry Finn. Two, like, notoriously difficult books to get through in high school. And one of them is just, like, aged immediately poorly. And it was the first time, like, I learned that my teacher said out loud, like, after having done the lesson and not really talking about opinions, but just literary style and all that nonsense, she said, like, I actually don't like this book. And we were like, what? Like, were we allowed to not like this? Why are we being taught it? And yeah, it was a really reflective, like, moment where it's like, I feel like I wasted weeks not saying how I felt, but I didn't know that that was an option.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I feel like they're just presented as good books.
Right.
Instead of good examples of, you know, I don't know how to say what I want to say. Just like, you know, if you're going to learn about a specific writing style, this is a great example of that.
Right,
or
right.
Whatever.
Whatever it is, right.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like kind of the sunk cost thing? Like, I've invested so much time in this already. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's such a weird feeling to have about your personal time. Like,
your own time. I feel like my opinion is invalid if I didn't finish it. Because it's like, can I say I didn't like it if I didn't finish it? It doesn't feel fair to say that. So I finish books that I'm not liking, and by the end I can still say I didn't like it. So it's like a failed experiment where it's like, you could have not finished this and the result would have been the same. Like, you still didn't like it. Very few times have I been not liking a book to the point where I wish I would stop, and by the end I'm like, oh, I was so wrong. That was great.
Yes. I have to say, I'm really new to DNFing. I cannot recall a book I didn't finish before this year. I feel like you have really changed my mind about it, which made me laugh when you say you haven't done it in 3 years or however long you just said. I was like, wait a second. But and it's been really interesting because for me, there was the guilt. And then it also a little bit felt like failing, like I'm failing to get what everyone sees in this book, or I'm failing to see its value, and that's on me.
Right.
Yeah. It was just like a weird thing. And it, even now, like, okay, I've got two books that to talk about today that I DNF'd and one that I wish I had. And with both of these books, I had to be so explicit with myself and be like, it is fine that this book is not for you.
Totally.
I sound like a crazy person. I promise I am not unwell. Mostly.
I think people have a hard time with that in general with, like, all media, where it's like, if you say you didn't like it, you love that thing less in general. And that just isn't true. Like, I think people have a hard time with, like movie franchises, or like if there is a chapter of a franchise that that you didn't like, or you thought it ended poor, like Game of Thrones, like notoriously Game of Thrones, the television show, ended really terribly. And like, just like, in my opinion, objectively was not good storytelling. And that is the general consensus, was like, they really blew it at the end. And I feel comfortable saying that while still like having loved the show, being like, it ended not very good at all. I think people feel like they're like betraying what they've said to have loved if they can't be critical of it. Like, those two things can't exist at the same time, when they absolutely can. So I think that people have a hard time not liking a book that generally everybody loved, or wanting to DNF a book that generally everybody loved, because like that somehow might mean like you are a less valuable reader, you don't like reading as much as them. It's like, that's absolutely not true. Like, this book just didn't connect with me, and I love reading still.
Yeah, that's such a good point. It brings to my mind this thing where when you and I don't see eye to eye on a book, or we both didn't enjoy it, we spend like a half an hour falling all over each other apologizing. Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's so weird to me because my feelings around it aren't, you should like the book I like.
Totally.
Because I'm like, yeah, Michael didn't like it. I'm immediately like, is it okay that I like it? Are any of the things I like about it problematic?
Sure.
Is it okay that I've disagreed with my friends? And of course it is.
Right.
But it's still one of those things where that flashes through my head. Oh, yeah.
It's actually a lot harder to, it's like so easy for me to disagree in my book club. And I think it's because it's like 11 or 12 people. But when it's just the two of us, it is really hard. It feels unkind.
It does.
And it isn't unkind. Because something else that we always do is like, we're always like, wow, that's a really good point. I really like what you said there. I felt like, you know what I mean? Like, I have to like absolutely validate how you feel about a book that you like hated. And then I'm like, absolutely, yes, true. Very good. Good point. I didn't think about that. Here's what I liked about it.
I'm about to do it. I hear what you're saying. But I honestly feel that way.
Yes.
Even when I didn't like even if I liked something and you didn't, I'm like, okay, yeah, okay. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't care about that.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, like, doesn't change how my opinion about it, but it does like illuminate, I think, the kind of readers we are and how we differentiate sometimes. Like, what I always, well, I don't want to say if it's one of your picks. Have I read any of your picks?
I definitely. Well, probably. I don't know.
Have any of them been on the podcast together?
No.
Okay. I think often of Normal People when.
Yeah.
You know, like, you really didn't like it and I thought it was fine, which is like by no means like a rave review. But I always think about like what you brought to it. And how, like, it really didn't click with me, some of the things that you were saying that you had read in. And the one that always makes me laugh is how you were like, these people are boring. Like, they're supposed to be brilliant and intellectual, and they have the most boring conversations. And I was like, oh, that's what I was feeling, was boredom. You know? Yes. It's like, thank you. That was helpful.
Thank you for putting words to my feelings. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's hard when the DNF or possible DNF involves your friends. And it's so silly because I cannot imagine us having a conversation about a book in which I was like, I really think less of Michael now.
Of course. Unless it was like, what's that huge, like, World War or like German book, Mein Kampf or something?
I don't know.
If it was just like some like wild propaganda, I would want you.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unless you were like, I don't know, I just really, really love Tucker Carlson's new book. I just can't even. And that wouldn't even have anything to do with the book.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Like, oh, no.
It's a larger conversation.
So I feel like we agree. You should definitely DNF. Nothing bad will happen to you if you do not finish a book that you don't like. And there are so many books out there. Reading is for pleasure and for learning. And even when it's challenging, it should be rewarding.
Absolutely.
I mean, sometimes books are hard. I don't know. How do you differentiate between this book is challenging me in some way and I don't like this book?
I'm glad you're asking that question because one of the books that I'm bringing today, that I brought today, is a book that its intention was to be a challenging but impossible to put down.
Mm-hmm.
And I have read books like that. There is a book called Bastard Out of Carolina by Dorothy Allison, I believe her name is. And that was, by every definition, should have been impossible to read because it was just really detailed descriptions of abuse on a child and is something that I just cannot stomach very often.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so beautiful. And also knowing that I think this is true. It's a little bit autobiographical of the author's life growing up. I really couldn't put it down. Like, I was so moved by it. And there is a book that I'm bringing today that was the most difficult book I've ever tried to read that I knew, like, I'm no matter what happy ending this possibly could have, like, everything this character is going through, me as a reader, like, I can't fathom being comfortable reading this anymore. So I think that, like, it really just comes down to, like, I don't know if the book is bad. I just can't read it because it's making me feel really uncomfortable, versus a book that feels exploitative about specifically here abuse. Like, when something's like, when abuse is beautifully written, that makes me feel weird. It's like, abuse is disgusting and ugly. Like,
yes.
I don't want to return to these sentences because you wrote them really well.
Yeah.
When it just feels a little bit like, yeah, I guess that's where I'm getting at, is like, when it feels disingenuous and like almost like trauma porn, I just like think that is when it's a bad book.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. And I, as you were kind of having a hard time describing how you felt, I felt like it immediately got to the core of it for me, because I think sometimes even in the books I read today, it's like I start to question why I don't like it and whether or not it's a feeling I should push through. Like, what is making me uncomfortable and why? And so I think that's always the hard balance.
Well, and sometimes it's so personal that it all has nothing to do with whether or not the book is connecting with us. Like, sometimes books are connected with us deeply and then something happens in it and it is too close to home that we're like, nope. Mm-hmm. And I know that there was a book that we've read together where finishing it was challenging for you because of personal reasons, not because you weren't liking the book. And so, you know what I mean? So I think it's also
when we read A Million Reasons Why.
Yeah, I wanted to give you some privacy if you didn't want to say.
No, but, it's no problem.
But do you know what I mean? Like, that feels different because it's not, at no point were you like, I can't finish this because it's bad. I'm actually loving it, but it is, it is opening something in me that, like, I don't know if I can explore right now.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a book that I finished it and I loved it, and I'm glad that I pushed through it.
Yeah.
And I was immediately able to identify what made me feel uncomfortable. And in that book, one of the characters has a child that's in the NICU. And I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Because, that was probably the worst experience of my life.
Yeah.
And so that's a hard thing to read about. But you were like, I think that it's handled well. I think you can proceed. And you were absolutely right. So it was fine in the end. But it's one of those things where I wasn't sure which direction we were going. So we're going to destigmatize this today. Everyone's allowed to not finish books, even if they're really popular. And we are going to share books that we did not finish. Or books that we wish we had not finished.
Yeah, we're gonna destigmatize this by giving you books that we did finish, but wish we hadn't.
Do as we say and not as we do. Gosh, we're out of control.
My first one is a book that I did DNF. It's the last book that I DNF'd. I've talked about it sort of not really at length on the podcast, and it's been, I think, probably since season one, but it's called My Absolute Darling by Gabriel Tallent, and it was his debut novel that came out in 2017, and the cover is so gorgeous. I wish I could show it to you, but I sold it to Half Price Books because I couldn't finish it.
pause. Do you keep your books that you DNF?
No. Get out of here. It's bad juju.
Of the books that I'm going to talk about today, I still have two of them.
This feels wrong. Like, right? This is a Freaky Friday moment. Like, I should be buried in all the books I haven't read.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I tend to try to get rid of them. But I never throw them out. I want to give them to, like, friends, or I sell them to Half Price Books. Like, anyway, yeah, I got rid of this piece of shit. But this story is about a 14-year-old girl named Julia, but she goes by Turtle, who lives in California with her father, Martin. Martin is a sociopath and is convinced of some sort of impending doom, like some sort of catastrophe. And so he forces Turtle to learn all of these survivalist skills. So she's really, 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 really proficient at, like, shooting a gun and knowing how to clean a gun and I think, like, wielding knives and all of that stuff. Her father, Martin, is incredibly physically and sexually abusive to her. Aww. And it is slowly revealed as you keep reading, like it just gets worse and worse and worse. So it's like kind of like breadcrumbs to see how horrible her situation is. But Turtle is so, she's experiencing such intense Stockholm syndrome that she just makes endless excuses for him. And there are teachers who suspect something sinister is happening, but Martin threatens Turtle's life if she ever tells anybody. Turtle's grandfather is her only living family member, and he dies. And when he dies, Martin disappears for several months, leaving Turtle alone. And then when he returns, he brings home a young girl named, I think her name is Cayenne, and she's only like 8 or 9. And that's basically as far as I got, because I could see where this was headed.
Yeah.
And I was having the hardest time reading this, because I think it was NPR maybe that said, like, that this book is the most difficult book to read this year, but is also impossible to put down. And I was like, okay, I found it very easy to put down.
yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, and not because, like, we've talked about this before. Books about abuse on children are important because it happens. It was so, so, so abusive and so detailed and felt very real that I was having a really hard time praising this as like a beautifully written book without also like making space for all this like really abusive situation to exist in my brain and in my life for a while. And I couldn't finish it, and never really thought anything of it. And then maybe a year later, a former coworker of mine, Mackenzie, I don't know if she listens to this. Hi, Mackenzie. On her Instagram stories, she's a big reader too, and she had posted a picture of the cover, and it said, "Has anybody read this? I am having a really hard time getting through it, but everyone says how good it is." And I told her, I was like, I could not finish it either. I actually like got rid of the book. It was just so difficult to get through and hard to separate fiction from life, because I know this happens. And I had to get rid of it. And she was like, okay, I'm not going to finish it either. And then I have since gone and read the rest of the plot, and it just sounds horrific. And even though there's like a semblance of a happy ending for the main character, that person still went through all this horrible stuff for my entertainment. And it just felt impossible to get through. And it was impossible to get through.
Yeah.
Because it's hard. And I hate talking about books as if I didn't love. Like, I don't want this to be a negative podcast ever.
Right.
I can recognize that this was a objectively like good book. The writing was really good. The characters really well painted. The setting was well detailed. I just like couldn't get through it. It was too specifically detailed about something that I just think is so grotesque.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. I tend to, you know, a different form of DNFing. I tend to not even pick those up.
Well, and it did remind me of our conversation about the book I read, Godshot, by Chelsea Beaker, I think her name is. And it's about a mother and her daughter who are part of this cult. And there is some abuse in it, or there's quite a bit of abuse in it, sorry. And at the time, I was like, I can't decide if I didn't love this because it's not a good book or because of the abuse in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between that, like, that was totally, I was able to finish that. Like, I didn't have the same, like, stomach pain as I did reading this. And can ultimately like say, yeah, I actually think that was a good book. It was maybe not the right book for me at the moment.
Yeah.
But a lot of it comes down to like offering characters, even in those horrible moments, like a sense of autonomy and agency. And the main character in Godshot had more of a say about her life than this character does.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like I was like perpetuating something that I didn't want to be perpetuating.
Yeah. No, I get that. I often go back and forth about whether, like, is it the moment right now or is it the book? And it's a perfect segue into my first book, which was Miracle Creek by Angie Kim.
Yep.
I'm just going to go out of the gate with a huge bestseller, you know, like this book does not need my approval. I have DNF'd this book 3 times and I still own it. Why do I keep trying to make it happen?
That is an unanswerable question.
I love that you're like trying not to laugh at me. I can see Michael and he's like covering his mouth. Like, I don't want to like totally crack up. But yes, what is wrong with you?
Well, but it's funny because we briefly discussed having this be our book club pick like last year.
Yes.
And I had read it before.
Oh, you have.
And I'll let you, well, okay, I'll let you talk before I say how I felt about it.
Okay, good. Okay, so brief recap. The Yoon family are Korean immigrants and they run a hyperbaric chamber business. And their participants come with the hopes of improving their health conditions. You know, anything from like autism to infertility. And there is an explosion in the hyperbaric chamber. 2 people die. And there ends up being a court case. And it's revealed as you move through the chapters that the alleged culprit is, it's just not the open and shut case maybe that you thought it was.
Right.
And the reviews used words like intricately plotted, mesmerizing, gripping. So many words. So many words that I love. It's authentic. It's not a conventional whodunit. I was like, oh my gosh, it's great because I don't like those.
Yeah.
Right. This is perfect. And it highlights that there are so many shades of gray in the world. And I was like, this is the book for me. I could not get into this book. I really wanted to explore the issues of immigration and education and language. The first time I tried to read it, it was on audio. And I'm always running around. And I was trying to read it for an episode of the podcast and we were really pressed for time. I'd had a really shitty week.
Yeah.
And I called you and I was like, I cannot deal with this book. And there were just like so many characters and my brain was everywhere. And I said, I just can't focus on this. It's not the book. It's me. Like, I can't, you know, and you helped me pick a couple other things to read that week.
Oh, okay. I'm remembering that now.
Yes. And so, you know, I assumed it was like I wasn't in the right headspace. So the second time I tried to read it, I had a paper copy. And I was like, okay, Jill, here we go. So excited again. I wasn't even nervous. I was so confident that the first time was just like, I was not in the mood for it. I just found it really tedious. And there are parts of it that felt repetitive as the characters kind of process their reaction to the testimony and the revelations. And I was just like, yes, we know that this happened. Uh-huh. And then the third time I tried, I kind of admitted to myself that I am both super sensitive to both seeking out any kind of treatment you can when you face a medical situation, especially with a child,
mm-hmm.
that you can't fix or that mm-hmm. no one can fix, and the industry and the people who prey on that. Not that every – and I want to be very sensitive about that subject. Because I've been there.
Yeah.
And I have been a person who feels like they would try anything. And I have seen what happens to people when, you know, they're just really taken advantage of.
Yeah.
But also I see the confidence and, you know, whatever. It has benefits and I don't want to say that it doesn't.
Sure.
I'm going far afield. The point is that I have a lot of complex feelings about this topic. And usually when things hit home, I kind of pause and I'm like, take stock of it and figure out, you know, like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
And I can push through. But for this one, I just couldn't.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I don't think that's it. I think it's just that I don't like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't like the runaway bestseller that, yeah. And I feel bad. I feel bad for not liking it. I feel like I should. Even now, and I still own it.
Yeah, I still own it, and I did not like it either.
Tell me.
Okay, so I actually read it off of a recommendation of a former colleague of ours, Catherine. I think she listens to this. Hi, Catherine.
Oh, I love Catherine.
And so, like, sorry, wow, this was a... Okay, sorry, I didn't like the book you recommended. But I love you, and I think you're a great person and an amazing teacher. But it was also, like, she was saying exactly what everybody else is saying about it, which is, like, it was compelling, it was different, like, it's not your typical, like, courtroom drama. And so I got a copy from the library, actually, and it was one of the last books I read that year. I think that was 2019, and I almost immediately didn't understand all of its runaway praise. I was very bored. I thought a lot of it was cheesy. I thought the dialogue was, like, really not very good. God, this is a bestseller. We're never getting an update on this podcast ever again. And I also was unsurprised by the ending. And I'm not someone who guesses things easily. Like, that's a running joke in my family, my husband and I. Like, I am shocked by every twist in everything. Oh,
same. Yeah.
And I was like, well, this person did it. Like, it feels pretty, like, simple to me. And that ultimately made, like, the reading experience kind of, like, slow and boring, because the whole time I was like, I'm pretty sure it's this person. And then it was. And so we were talked, and this was before you had started reading it. I think you had said, like, this book's getting a ton of good feedback.
Yeah, I'm excited to read it. Yeah.
Yeah, we should maybe make it a book club pick. And I had never really expressed my not liking of it to anyone, because I was like, this is a bestseller. Everyone loves it. Like, I am what's wrong about it. Let's read it. In my head, I was like, yeah, we'll read this eventually. And I will have been wrong about it. And when we talk about it, I will probably have liked it. And, like, then knowing you couldn't finish it, I was like, maybe there are different ways to read something. Maybe I'm not wrong, but also I'm not right. Like, that's the thing with opinions, is, like, it's just an opinion.
Yeah.
And I really struggled with this one. I almost made it one of my DNFs, but I was scared to say.
Yeah.
And I just, because I just, like, there are other books I didn't like more than that one that are here. But yeah, I had a really hard time with that one. Like, really hard time.
I didn't even get far enough into it to even have any opinion about who
maybe did it. Yeah. Yeah, because it was like, I meet you, like, the cover is really pretty. Everyone says the most unbelievable things about it. So I think, too, it's a little bit of the expectations of, like, wow, okay, so, like, this is a debut book and it's getting this kind of talk. It must be genius work. And it was kind of, oh, God, nothing's wrong with commercial, but it was just very commercial. And I was expecting something, like, very literary and thought-provoking. But the author is actually a practicing lawyer, and this was her first novel, which, like, made a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you have next?
I feel like I just said one. I just talked for a while. The next one is called Pizza Girl by Jean Kyung Fraser. And it's a book that I read at the very end of last year. And I had just been on, like, a reading kick. I'd read a book that I loved and was, like, back into it. And then I had gotten this book months before at Downbound Books, which is a local indie bookstore we love. And was like, oh, finally, I'll read it. It's really short. It sounds right up my alley. It's about an 18-year-old pregnant girl working as a pizza girl at a delivery place in suburban LA. And she is sort of in the midst of, like, not really knowing where she's going and having just, like, what is a typical, like, 18-year-old, like, I'm supposed to have any clue who I am and what I want to do. Also, I'm pregnant. She's grieving the recent-ish loss of her father. She's kind of avoiding her mom, who's really trying to be supportive, and a very, like, attached, loving boyfriend. She then becomes really engrossed and kind of obsessed with this woman, Jenny, who calls the pizza place and asks for a very specific pizza for her son. Jenny's new to the neighborhood, and her son is having a really hard time with the move. Mm-hmm. And she's been calling pizza places to try and get them to make this, like, pickle-covered pizza that he loved in where they used to live, and nobody's doing it right. So she connects with her on the phone, like on a deeper level, and makes it and then delivers it to her. And then from there, forms an odd friendship with her that gets, I think, is supposed to get kind of confusing and blurry, and leads to, I think, what was supposed to be like something of an explosive ending. It's like a little bit satire, a little bit oddball comedy, but mostly just like feelings, lots of feelings. And all of the reviews for it are calling it just like an indie delight. It's like funny and bittersweet, winning all of these like first novel awards. And it is like I think it's from an independent publisher. And I love books like that. And it just wasn't any of those things. It was, God, this sounds awful. Well, first of all, I almost immediately was like, gosh, I really want to DNF this. But I was already behind on my
book list.
So I was like, got to finish it. Even though it's like 120 pages and it took me like a full month to finish. It read like a very promising first draft. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of what made me more mad about it than anything, is that the idea is there. I wish it had a better editor, because none of it was particularly witty. None of it was something I hadn't already read before, and just was like ultimately so unbelievable that this pizza person, like, she had like her regulars that she would deliver to and would have like a relation, like have like a chat with them at their door and stuff. And I was like, I don't think that happens. And I would be really surprised if a pizza delivery person like felt anything about the people they're delivering their pizza to.
I'm just picturing the scene of when a pizza comes to our house, and like anywhere between like 2 and, if they have friends over, like 7 or 8 children rush the door, and they're all being loud. And the pizza person is like, do I give you the pizza? You're a child. Oh, thank God. Here comes an adult. I want someone to write a tip on the receipt.
And I never, and I ordered a lot of pizza growing up, and I never once had a repeat pizza delivery person. Like, it was always some different teenager. So anyway, it just wasn't remotely what it promised it could have been. And I think it annoyed me, because I've read other books that I think deserve the same kind of praise it's getting that are getting wildly looked over. Wish I DNF'd it.
Can I tell you a sidebar story that is only related to this conversation is pizza?
Uh-huh. Perfect.
So after we had Penny and Quentin, we ate a lot of pizza. And we would get it delivered. So we were so tired. And it's one of those things where Mark and I were both like, we order pizza way too much. Like, we would say that to each other as we're ordering pizza. And this is like before DoorDash, so like you couldn't just order anything you wanted. If you wanted something delivered to your house, the choice was pizza.
Absolutely.
So one night Mark gets a call from the manager at the pizza place we always order from, and he said, hey, I was just calling to check on this order we just got. It says it's from you. And Mark was like, yeah, we ordered a pizza. And he was like, well, you guys always pay with American Express, and this one's charged to a MasterCard. I just wanted to check and make sure everything was okay with it. Mark is like, what?
Like, cancel it. It wasn't us. You're right.
And of course, my reaction to this was, I'm never ordering a pizza ever again.
That's the only reasonable response.
But that is the only personal connection I've ever had with a pizza employee. And it was so awkward and uncomfortable. I never want it to happen again.
Right. Thank you for adding that.
Yeah. No, I don't. You don't have a personal relationship with your pizza store.
Yeah. And then the minute you do, you're like, I'm out.
Exactly.
Do you have another one?
I do. I actually gave this book to you.
I know what you're talking about.
I don't know if you've read it. It's called Stay and Fight by Madeline, is it Fifth?
I don't know, but I'm really glad you brought this one, because I don't know anything about it other than the fact that you DNF'd it.
Okay. So again, I'm going to tell you the premise and you're going to be like, Jill, amazing. It's set in Appalachian, Ohio. Do you know I have a big soft spot for rural stories? So important to highlight the emotional depth and ingenuity. It's about a woman named Helen. She arrives in Appalachian, Ohio, and she's just like overflowing with like love and hope. And she and her boyfriend are going to live off his land, like off the grid. They're going to live off the land. But of course, you know, like winter is coming really fast. The boyfriend takes off and she is just kind of left. She has nowhere to go. Like, she has no money and nowhere to go. So she meets this guy named Rudy, who's like her government questioning wisdom in quotes, spouting boss and neighbor and this couple. And they help her basically make it to the spring. And those neighbors, Karen and Lily, are awaiting the birth of their child. And it's a boy. And so that means they have to leave the women's land trust that they've been living on. So Helen invites them to kind of throw in with her on this piece of property she has that her boyfriend left with her. And, you know, make a life that sustains them. And, you know, it covers the first few years and they scrape and they, you know, manage to get by. And, you know, the cranky conspiracy theory, anti-government Rudy, who is funny. I will say I liked him. he sets up this fruit tree nursery on the pipeline, edging the easement on their land. And I mean, like, for better or worse, these people are a family. And then the little boy, who's named Pearlie, decides he wants to go to public school. And the outside world is brought clamoring into their family. And even when I hear this summary, it's like I want to read the book, even though I know I didn't like it. and Michael had mentioned that he was interested in it. So this is the only book of my three that I actually don't have because I gave it to you.
Yeah.
but aside from Rudy, who is a minor character, I did not find any of these characters likable. And I want to clarify, like, I don't need to like the characters to find the story compelling, but I do need a reason to root for them.
Yeah.
Or to sympathize or empathize with them or something.
Right.
And I found all of these people annoying, and I just wanted to shout at them to use their words and they would have no problems.
100%.
Second, you can live however you want. I do not care until you endanger a child.
Yep.
That is not okay. And the piece of this story that brings everything crashing down involved endangering the life of Pearlie. And I did not feel even a teeny tiny bit bad when CPS shows up.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where I was like, look, I get Appalachian culture. This is not a situation where the outside world comes in and there are things about your culture that they don't understand. The choices you have made are not okay.
Right, regardless.
I didn't even read a synopsis of this book, so I don't know how it ends even now. Like, I was just like, no, I didn't like the way it portrayed the people. Yes, you live off the land, sure. But no, not just being careless with your kids because you, I don't know, don't want people telling you what to do.
Like, I think there's a difference between, like, not liking characters and unlikable characters, which is that I think what you're saying is like, when there is an unlikable character, it's like built into them. And reading it, we know that they are flawed or complicated in a specific way that makes us root for them. It's like, oh gosh, I can't like think of a single unlikable character that I, as an example right now, but it is different than reading characters that you just don't like. And I think that the lack of, I want to say, like, I don't want to say empathy, but maybe authenticity, because I think Appalachian stories are really hard to get right. And a lot of people have a hard time reading. I guess, like, a lot of people, it's hard to find ones that feel like they're doing it well and authentically, because, like, so often Appalachian people are made into caricatures of a version of themselves that is true.
Yeah.
And is the difference, I think it's like, no, you're highlighting, I think, a stereotype instead of showing me a character who is like, I understand and wouldn't make the decisions they're making, but I understand. And so I find myself rooting for them versus being like, I didn't like those characters because you set them up for me to not understand them in a way that like set up a barrier between us.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is less so now, but like when Hillbilly Elegy was like at its yep. peak and J.D. Vance was literally everywhere, you yep, know, it's like, oh, he's sharing his profound Appalachian experience. No, he's not.
Never was.
And while, you know, it's just one of those things where I think people who are closer to the situation, we're just kind of like, no, I don't think so.
Right.
But those aren't the people who have voices.
Right. At,
you know, the media and the people who, let's face it, it's like the people in the publishing centers yes. have no way to know whether or not this is correct or not. And they were just like, oh my gosh, this confirms all of my preconceived notions.
Exactly.
This is it. And again, I don't think anybody did that on purpose, but it totally. Was what it was. And this didn't feel exactly like that, but it also didn't feel totally authentic to me.
Totally. Like,
they have snakes living in their house, and I just don't see a situation where parents are like, Yeah. I mean, it's super not a good idea, but it's fine.
Right.
And then everything that happens after that is like predicated on that one fact. And I just couldn't get over that. I was like, no, I don't care where you're from. You're not just kind of like, my kid sneaks with a poisonous snake. It's fine.
Like, what would be more authentic is, like, that they deal with it, but in a way that is not dramatic. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like, the way that's not effective.
Yes, exactly.
Or, like, this is a problem we're constantly battling. We know yes. it's a risk. Not, I invited snakes into my house.
Right. I love that you bring up Hillbilly Elegy, though, because I know people, I hadn't read it, and I had just seen what everyone was talking about it. I had asked Jamie if she'd heard of it. And what she thought, because I've heard it's really good, and I was like recommending it to her, having not read it, and she was like the first person to tell me like I have heard of it, and it's bullshit, and the experiences are like really, really not authentic, and a lot of Appalachian people are being like fuck this guy, and
yeah.
lo and behold, now he's like trying to run for office, and everyone hates him, but wish we'd known that then.
I a little bit, I mean, this is totally off the point of our podcast, but he is running for Senate, right, in the state of Ohio?
I think.
He has a lot of name recognition. I don't know what's going to happen.
I'm
worried people will be like, yeah, he gets it.
But he also says some really, like, he said something, what? He said an idiotic thing about Russia and Ukraine.
Oh, did he?
And then immediately bit him in the ass. So I do think that he's like enough of a out loud idiot that
he's going to take care of himself there.
Yeah. I still want to read that. And I think I probably will try to, because I want to be able to see if I DNF it or not.
It is. And I haven't talked about that book with anybody.
I don't
see it, you know, around. And I'm curious whether... I'm curious, like, should I go and revisit it, or is it like, no, this is not great?
Yeah.
So I'm open to either option. I'm curious after you read it to see what you think.
Yeah, I'll let you know. My third and final one is a wild story of, like, a lot of people wished they had DNF'd this. And I had been hearing people saying that it wasn't good before I decided to read it. because it was also like a big marketing like push for the publisher. They were calling it like the next like real like feminist book about like motherhood and what it means to be a young woman. And these are things that I'm like very into, and was at Joseph Beth, another indie bookstore that we love in Cincinnati, Ohio, and read the first like page. And I was like, this is beautifully written. I don't know what people are talking about. After one page, I'm an idiot. And I bought it. It's called Topics of Conversation by Miranda Popke. And it's a book that is composed almost exclusively of just conversations between women throughout the main character's like 20 years of life. Like, it's not 0 to 20. I think she's like 22 or 23 at the beginning, and then the next 20 years. And it's linear, and that time keeps passing, but it's not like the first one's some year, the next one's maybe 6 years later, completely different characters except for the main character. And their intention is to be like open conversations about like sexuality and identity, infidelity, self-sabotage, desire, motherhood, loneliness, art, just like runs the gambit. And at first I was really into this. I never read a book this way. And it reminded me a lot of how people talk about conversations with friends or normal people, like kind of just like a lackadaisical kind of thinly plotted book.
Yeah.
And the writing I really loved. And I was like, after the first chapter, I was like, this is amazing. Or the first story, I was like, this is great. I don't know what people's problem is. Like, I'm loving this. And then almost instantly, was it also what we've just been talking about, was that I hated the main character. I mean, I thought it was just a lot of bad behavior that I was supposed to like understand or sympathize with. But I was like, you're just being a bad friend and a bad person. And I've been given no indication as to why you're doing this, why I'm supposed to be on your side, if I'm supposed to be on your side. And I really hated it. I mean, I really, really did not like this book, but it was everywhere. And I at least knew that other people felt this way. And I had gone in actually to my interview, my first interview with Writer's Digest. And we were just, who is now my boss, Amy, we were talking about books we'd been reading. And I had recently read Topics of Conversation, and she had too. And she was like, oh, what do you think? And I was like, I thought it was a book.
pages, words. Yes.
The font was pretty. I liked the cover. And she told me she had read, she was a member of Book of the Month, and she told me that she also really didn't like it. And so many people who had gotten it from Book of the Month had complained to Book of the Month about how bad it was, that they reimbursed them for the book. Like, sent a letter out saying, wow, like, we apologize.
Yeah.
Here's your money back.
I remember you telling me about this, but I didn't remember what the book was.
Yeah, which is wild and validating in that it ultimately read like what is a very privileged white person complaining a lot. So there's the best review I can give for it.
Yeah. I think if you get a refund on your Book of the Month, that's a sign.
Yes. Even if you didn't read it.
Okay, my last book is, I'm just going to preface this by saying, send all your hate mail to Michael. Michael@bookitpod.com. No. Okay, so it's The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Ooh.
And I wanted to include like one classic in our discussion because I love classics usually, but this one like didn't click with me as a student. And I thought it was because we analyzed it to death.
Sure.
And that, you know, that's why I never wanted to read it ever again. And then a few years ago, John Green, the author, started an online book club to read classics. And this was like one of the first, I think it was the first book, but if not, it was among the first. And I thought, oh, great. I love John Green.
Yeah.
A book club sounds great. We can just kind of talk about it without like dissecting how every single word in this book is a symbol for something. Great. I was wrong. I do not get the hype about this book even now. It is a group of toxic people having toxic interactions. It's supposed to say something about unconditional love, but I honestly don't see it. It is unnecessarily dramatic. Everyone is terrible. And it's strung together by a string of coincidences. This book is not for me. And now I've read it twice. What is wrong with me?
You're too ready to think you're wrong. You keep giving things more chances than they probably deserve.
Apparently. But I'm finally in a place where I will tell you I don't like The Great Gatsby. And I'm not even going to apologize. I don't like
Good.
It.
I can't say with any sort of certainty my feelings about it, because I've only read it one time in high school, and I do remember thinking I'm supposed to love this, right? So then I guess I did, but I don't know how true that is, because it was not free thinking on my part. It was because you're supposed to love The Great Gatsby, and for me it's more about sort of historically F. Scott Fitzgerald just being kind of a not nice dude, especially to Zelda Fitzgerald, who was an author herself and didn't get the recognition she deserved. And part of that was because of him. But this is interesting. I would love to do an episode about classics and seeing like which deserve to be called them and which don't. Cause I also ultimately think that, like, regardless of how we feel about them, they did sort of like change fiction somehow, you know, like The Great Gatsby set into motion a certain type of storytelling.
Sure.
And it is interesting to go back and be like, but should it have?
Yes. You know? Is there another book we could have held up instead right. of this one? I have never done this, but I sort of sometimes want to ask people who say they like it. I want to be like, okay, do you say you like it because you feel like you should?
Yeah.
Do you say you like it because you saw the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and you love the costumes?
Right.
Or did you actually love this book?
Yeah. My hot take, I guess, is that I genuinely love The Catcher in the Rye. And I think that, like, in the last 15 years, it's become more popular to feel free to say you don't like that book.
Yeah.
And I've just become more, like, kind of afraid to be like, actually, I do like it. Because, like, the new, like, popular thing is to not like, I don't want to say popular. People feel more free to say they don't like it. And people have asked me that, too. It's like, okay, but do you really, like, you read it in high school? And I was like, I have also read it outside of high school, and I like it more than I did in high school. Because I actually think it's a very valid question. Like, when did you say you liked it? Was it before you realized you had options to say you didn't?
Mm-hmm.
And if you really do like it, I want to talk about it.
That's really interesting. I read it in college. I have not read it since.
What, Catcher in the Rye or Great
Catcher
Gatsby?
In the Rye. And my overwhelming feeling is that it was one of those books like The Outsiders, where I felt like professors and teachers are like, you should really, I'm so cool by having you read
Absolutely.
This book.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm the cool teacher. And so that is my overwhelming recollection and feeling about it. So I feel like I don't have an opinion.
I love that you're saying that, because that was how you were cool in high school if you liked Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah.
And so I was like, then I like it because I'm desperate to be cool. And then reading it in college for the first time since then, being like, I didn't understand what I read at all in high school. I like it so much more now. And I think since then, it's gotten this stereotype of being like about a privileged white boy who's just complaining a lot. And I understand that criticism, but I also think it's important to recognize that, like, boys have mental health issues too.
Yeah.
And it is one of the first books to handle that and to make it sort of commercial and everyone is reading about it. Because I think, like, we can't have a discussion about mental health if we don't include everyone in that conversation. Anyway, we're not even talking about Catcher in the Rye. I love that you added Great Gatsby to this.
We can talk about as many books as we want. No one's the boss of us.
Yeah, this is a book podcast. Well, I love this. Something else I want to add to my life, and I saw this on Instagram. It was a tweet that a friend of ours Books in My Lap is her handle, shared on her stories was like, I am into DNF, but I'm also doing NRNs, which are not right nows. Like books that like check off all the boxes, you know it's good, but just is not connecting with you right now and that you want to return back to it. There are so many books I shouldn't have read because I wasn't in the right mind frame for them that I liked but would have loved later.
Yes. When Anna posted that, it was very recently. Was it this week?
Yeah,
it was
like 3 days ago. Yeah.
Yeah. I just started laughing. I was like, oh my gosh, she's psychic. I almost sent it to you. I think it's hilarious that now we're talking about it.
Yeah, because like there's three books that I have NRN'd and I'm like, yeah, I will love that when I'm ready for it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've got to be in the place for it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, listen, if you have books that you DNF'd or books that you're NRNing, this is not the NRA, the NRNing, NRN, let us know about them. We can be found at info@bookitpod.com, all over social at BookitPod, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and head to our website at bookitpod.com for more bookish content and our bookshop affiliate link, bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod for any number of books that we talk about on this podcast. Jill, I'm so happy I didn't DNF our friendship.
Oh, wow. That would be so sad.
Yeah. I just wanted to say something thematically. Okay, interesting.
Great. Yeah. I hope we weren't ever on the verge of that.
No, it was just supposed to be a cute thing to say that matched the episode.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Birkett-Ragasey and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.